Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show that explores all avenues of transformation and aims to offer some nuggets of gold that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature. Although, you know, sometimes that just might feel very counterintuitive, like a bird, the nightingale, singing out in the dark. I'm JJ, otherwise known as The Practical Alchemist, and today I invite you to join me and my guest on the Scottish coast for a spot of foraging. Okay, well, not physically, but if you've ever wanted to learn about seaweed, then I have just the man for you today. Jason Biles is a passionate forager and a professional chef. He's a permaculturist and an advocate for sustainable living. And he's the New Zealander behind the East Nuke Seaweed Company near me in Scotland. That's Nuke, N-E-U-K, a Scots word for corner. The name refers to a coastal corner of the east coast of Fife. Jason runs seaweed workshops along the coast from spring to autumn, and he's a treasure trove of seaweed and wild food knowledge. He was on this show a long time ago now, and I was delighted to welcome him back to give us the lowdown on this fabulous resource from nature and tell us why we should incorporate it into our diet.
Yep. Thanks, JJ. So, yes, the thing with seaweed is that it's not just one. There's no one thing about seaweed. You know, like most things, it's a very holistic approach. So, but we can start with the nutritional value first of all.
So
there's loads of nutrition in seaweed. It's full of magnesium, it's full of potassium, it's got all the trace elements that the body needs. Is really quite balanced, as well as in the fact that there's some protein, there's carbohydrates, is low in calories. So for all of those reasons, that's a good place to start why it's good and why seaweed. Then you've got all the things that seaweed does for us as well, and the intertidal. So that whole ecosystem that and seaweed is a anchor point in that ecosystem that is the intertidal. So it's slowing down the wave actions. It's creating seaweed. I mean, the oceans create, they say, about 70% more oxygen than the trees. You know, and when you think that the ocean is about 80% of the earth is ocean, that's where most of our oxygen is coming from. It's also a massive carbon sink as well. So there's lots of carbon being tied up in the sea, and with seaweed, it helps with that. It slows down wave action, so it's slowing down the soil erosion. As seaweed breaks down, so it gets washed up seasonally. As seaweed's breaking down, it's creating new soil. Anyone that grows tomatoes or cucumbers will know the beauty of seaweed. You know, every tomato grower I know, and I'm one of them, uses seaweed extract for the tomatoes. So seaweed, as it breaks down, it's releasing a lot of growth hormones. It's releasing all these hormones that are strengthening young plants, and they're helping plants to flower, to bring on fruit, all that sort of thing. So it's breaking down, it's creating soil, but it's also strengthening the young plants that are there. So that's helping soil erosion. And then, of course, seaweed itself is a massive habitat. So where the seaweed grows, there's a massive habitat. Everything's in there. That's the home, the playground, the feeding grounds, the breeding grounds for all fish, and, you know, and then the birds are there. You've got crabs, you know, everything. So it's just full of life. So, you know, for me, seaweed is a giver of life.
Wow, I love that way of describing it, as a giver of life. And just as you were talking about the birds there, it reminded me of the other day when we were watching just a couple of gulls picking around in the seaweed that had been, the tide had left, picking around and seeing what they could get out of it, because all sorts of things hide in there that a gull would like to eat.
I was just going to say, yeah, you get all the wee sand hoppers and everything in that dried seaweed, you know, which are full of nutrient. So, yeah, the birds love it. I put a bit of dried seaweed in for my chicken. The chicken likes that as well.
Yeah. Have you just got one chicken, or have you got more than one chicken?
Well, unfortunately, I've just got the one chicken at the moment. Yeah. We'll be looking to get some friends.
Well, that would be good. And there are so many different types of seaweed. Now, a lot of people just think seaweed is maybe the stuff that maybe the stuff that you get in a packet from a posh supermarket, like the kind of seaweed that you get wrapped around sushi. Or maybe they think of kombu, which is Japanese name for kelp, really, basically.
Yep.
But there are so many different types. And I remember foraging for seaweed and getting some sea spaghetti. And it was a revelation because I cooked it with just, some garlic, and it was a bit of a garlicky sauce. Absolutely delicious. But not only absolutely delicious, it was so filling because it's so nutrient dense.
Yeah, that's right. Well, sea spaghetti, what got me really into seaweed in the UK, in Scotland, was I was a harvest manager for a commercial company for a number of years. But when I was doing that, we used to call sea spaghetti harvester's breakfast.
Love that.
Because we'd be out there quite early in the mornings. The earliest low tide would be 7. But if we were starting on a 7 o'clock low tide, then we were actually in the North Sea at 5 in the morning.
Wow.
I'd be knocking on your door at 4 in the morning. We're in the car park at 4:30. So you hadn't had time for breakfast, but a few nibbles of sea spaghetti. And you're right, it's so nutrient dense.
Yeah.
So you'd only need a few nibbles of it, and that would get you through the morning until we had a break, and then we'd have something to eat. And people often ask me, what is your favorite seaweed? Especially once they find out the amount of different seaweeds they are, because like you said, there's a bit of a, I don't know if it's misunderstanding or it's just that it's lost knowledge that people, when they think of seaweed, they just think of, kelp, or they think of like bladderwrack.
Yeah.
Because they're the seaweeds that we know. They're the ones that you see. The kelp is big. You can see it. It's washed up. The bladderwrack is, because of where it grows in the sort of upper shore, it's visible. That's what people see, and that's what they think of. They think that's it, but there's hundreds. But I'm often asked, what's my favorite seaweed? And sea spaghetti is definitely up there because it is so versatile. Like you said, you cooked it and you put it with a nice garlicky sauce.
Mm-hmm.
I've experimented with at least 30 different flavors, and it goes
Oh,
with
wow.
all of them.
Oh, wow. Really versatile then. Yeah.
Super versatile. So most of my workshops that I run through the spring, early spring through to autumn, this other thing, sea spaghetti is quite a long season.
Yeah.
So most of my workshops, people will experience sea spaghetti. So that's another reason maybe why it's my favorite, because it's got such a long season, but it's so versatile. So it doesn't matter if you are a vegan or you're a full carnivore or you're an omnivore. It doesn't matter what your taste is. I can find something that will go well with the sea spaghetti.
Wow, that's fantastic. And would you put sea spaghetti with a meaty sauce or something like that? Does it go with that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely. And so a big thing I talk about, and this is another thing, the beauty of seaweed is umami.
Yeah.
Most people have heard of umami now, but actually there's still people who haven't heard of it, because it's a fairly new concept for us. So it's the taste, it's another taste profile, umami. But, what a lot of people, when they hear of umami, they think of seaweed. And yes, seaweed's high in umami. And it was a Japanese person who sort of discovered it, but actually loads of foods have got umami in them, and meat is actually one of them. So beef, chicken, and most meats are quite high in umami, bacon, so these things will go well. And the other thing is that China, one of the biggest consumers of seaweed, and well, pretty much the biggest consumer of seaweed in the world, they're not vegetarian and they're not vegan. If you go to China, you will have seaweed, but it will be cooked up with meat as well.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. And I mean, so talking about one of the other seaweeds that people know, kelp, I will put some in everything, basically. If I'm cooking a stew or a soup or something, I'll add some just to bring out that flavor as well, because it really does enhance the flavor. In Chinese food, you see monosodium glutamate used a lot, which I try to avoid. But the kombu or kelp has a natural flavor enhancer, doesn't it?
It's got natural MSG in it, natural monosodium glutamate. And you're right, in this country, and I've been the same, is that we hear of MSG and we've only heard the bad connotations of it. And, maybe in the West we are a little bit more sensitive to MSG because we have less naturally in our diets. But a lab-based produced MSG is going to be much more irritant on the stomach. So a natural MSGs, i.e. from seaweed, is going to be much less irritant. I mean, you're likely not going to, it's not going to irritate at all. And, you know, I've actually had health professionals on my workshops, and we've talked about when I pick kombu and I show people what is kombu, and I tell them, I have a story that I tell. I'm not going to tell you the story because it'll ruin it for people. But
yeah,
it's basically about I'll give you a brief overview. It's basically about a farmer's wife, a beef farmer wife, whose family had said they would never eat seaweed. And I just told her this, you could use it in lasagna. And she said, oh my God, lasagna, that's their favorite dish. So she went home, made them seaweed lasagna. And anyway, they love it and they eat it. But it's a flavor enhancer, exactly. But I've had health professionals while I'm talking about the MSG on my workshops. I said, well, what do you think, doctor? Is MSG in that form, a natural occurring MSG, good for you? And I've had three of them say, yes, it is good for you, because in theory, what it's doing is you're going to eat less. First of all, because it will fill you up. And then secondly, you're unlikely to put too much extra salt and stuff on there because it's enhancing those natural flavors.
Yeah.
So for those reasons as well, there's all the other things that we talked about before, that nutrient, is that if you're eating a bit less and you're putting less sodium on there, so those things as well is going to be good for you. You know, so it's reducing the amount of food you're eating because it fills you up. So therefore reducing calories, and then it's also, you're not adding on sodium and all this other flavors that you don't necessarily need. So that's another reason to include seaweed. And you're right. And the Japanese, they use dashi.
Yeah.
So dashi is a seaweed stock made from a similar seaweed to kombu. You could do it with most kelps, you can use it, but that's a flavor enhancer. It hasn't got a lot of flavor itself, but it just makes everything taste better.
Yeah. And just as you're talking about the sodium intake, it just made me think about how people maybe think that seaweed, because it comes from the sea and the sea is salty, seaweed is salty, but it isn't.
No, that's right. And so they say the seaweed has about 80% less sodium than salt. So there's not a lot of sodium in it, but again, it's that magnesium, it's that potassium, it's those trace elements that are giving it the flavor and they're giving it a saltiness. But it's more a holistic saltiness. So it's a rounded saltiness. I mean, obviously it does grow in the sea and there is salt in the sea as well. So you're going to get a little bit of that if you're having it straight from the sea. But people very often really surprised when I give them seaweed and they go, oh, it's not as salty as I thought it was going to be. In fact, that's not even salty at all, you know. And then sometimes when I'm cooking with certain seaweeds, I will add a little bit of salt, and nice sea salt, and I'll just add just a wee pinch, less than you would if you're doing broccoli or carrots or whatever, but just a little bit, and that just helps to bring out flavor.
Yeah, and you know, there are so many different tastes as well. So we talked about sea spaghetti, we talked about kombu or kelp, but there are so many other kinds. There's a dulse that tastes peppery. There are, you know, there's one that tastes of truffle. I mean, there's so many different tastes, aren't there?
Yeah, there is. There's lots of different flavors. And, you know, and that's what I love. I love, you know, half the reason I think that I do seaweed workshops is just to see the facials on, you know, when you give seaweed to people. I was at a little event yesterday, actually. It was for, high school students. It was like a careers day, actually, and a sort of hospitality. Mm-hmm. But I had some seaweed there, and I was giving it to the students. And, I mean, that made my morning, actually, just seeing these facials on these teenagers that were a little bit hesitant. Some of them were like straight away, I want seaweed. But other ones were like, And then friends would talk them into it. But just seeing the facials, you know, and that is, you know, and again, like I've said to you before, is that for me, it's not just all these amazing nutritional things, not just all this amazing stuff that seaweed's doing for us and for the planet and everything. For me, it's about connection, you know, and not only connection to the natural world, but connection to each other and to our communities. And, you know, it's not the first thing you think of. Seaweed helps to connect communities. But, you know, when I get 12 strangers come on a seaweed workshop, we spend 4 hours together in the tidal. By the time they leave, you know, people have made connections I've been doing workshops for 6 years. There's people that are still best mates from 6 years ago when we've done a workshop. So it's all these little things. And, It's all these things that, for me, that's what seaweed means. So it's connection to the natural world, it's connection to each other, it's connection to ourselves. And it tastes good. You can't go wrong.
Yeah, exactly. What's not to like? And as you can hear, Jason's a man after my own heart there. Now, we have to take a short break, but stay with us because there's lots more to learn about seaweed right after this.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio with me, JJ Stenhouse, the practical alchemist and the seaweed forager, chef and workshop leader, Jason Biles. And before the break, we were talking about connection to nature. I love seeing all the different birds and sea creatures in the rock pools when I'm down on the shore, whether I'm swimming or foraging for seaweed. It really does enhance my own connection to nature. Here's Jason again.
Yeah, it does. And, for me, it also brings back the fact that we're part of all of that. We're not out with of it. And you're right. There's a lot of that stuff. You just don't take the time to see it anymore.
Yeah.
So if nothing else, you come in a workshop with me, you're going to be just in the moment for 4 hours, 2 hours, 4 hours, and notice all those little things around you and just see the abundance of life that's out there. And it sort of puts it into perspective a little bit, I think.
It does. And just thinking about another letters, and we haven't really talked about the different tidal areas yet. So maybe we can talk about those in a sec. But another one that's very easy to recognize and is delicious is sea lettuce, because it does look like lettuce and you can have it in a salad. And it is lovely. But again, you can't have a whole load of it because it's just too nutrient dense. I can't eat too much of it because it's so nutrient dense.
Yeah, well, I know that you're into your sea swimming, JJ. So it's funny because it is a lot of sea swimmers, they say to me, oh, sea lettuce, they know it because it is very distinctive. And unlike some of the big kelps, it has a very delicate hold fast. So it is likely to get pulled off and be floating about. So that's what you often see it floating about, but it's got that very distinctive green. It's got a really distinctive, bright green. It looks like lettuce, and it's delicious, but it's very high in umami. And again, it's quite versatile, actually, what you can do with it. Yeah, I mean, I always like to have just a little jar of it that I've dried and put into the bullet blender. And then, it's nice just to add that to things. It goes really well with eggs, but you can put it into a smoothie as well. And you only need a tiny amount to get good nutrient levels.
Yeah, which is why if you try to have a whole salad of it, like you would have a lettuce salad or a green leaf salad, you can't finish it. I find anyway, you can't finish it. It's just too much. So it's interesting the way that is. But then you know, we're talking about how sea lettuce is often floating around. We don't want to collect it when it's floating around, do we? There are do's and don'ts of seaweed foraging, seaweed harvesting. So let's get into that a little bit, because I know a lot of people listening will be saying, well, what do I, you know, where do I find, what do I do?
Yeah. So, well, first of all, you need to, you need decent quality water, you know, straight away. So the East Newt, has got good quality water there.
Yeah, that's where we are. And that's where you do a lot of your harvesting in your workshops.
Yeah, that's right. And but you won't often see me. I mean, you won't find me in the actual harbour collecting seaweed. But, you know, a couple of really obvious things is, first of all, yeah, as a general rule, it's don't pick washed up seaweed. If you've got an abundance of washed up seaweed, then there's other uses for that. You can use that in the garden. There's lots of stuff you can do with that. But for eating, for the kitchen, you want fresh stuff that, you know, is growing, which of course, then there's sustainable ways to do it. So never just pull seaweed off the rocks. You must cut it and leave enough on there so it can grow back, and that a lot of seaweeds will reproduce, drop spores through the actual blade itself, like sea lettuce is one. It creates spores from the leaf. So you need to ensure you leave enough leaf there. So the general rule is take about a third of each seaweed. So don't eat washed up seaweed. Don't pull it off the rocks. Cut it. Leave enough on the plant that it can, well, it's not a plant, on the algae that it can reproduce. Make sure you get nice clean waters. You know, if you're on a stretch of beach and there's only one example of a particular seaweed, then you're better to leave that one. You know, go around the corner, you might find lots more of that. So if it's the only example on a stretch of beach, just leave that so it can try and, you know, reproduce. So they're all really good starters. You know, and for the quality of water in Scotland, we've got SEPA, the Scottish Environmental Protection Agency. So they've got a good website we can check out. You've got the Blue Flag Awards for the peaches, which unfortunately at the moment they don't have a foraging flag award.
Yeah, that would be really good.
That'd be really good. But, you know, the Blue Flag Awards about swimming. But obviously if they're telling you not to swim there, then you probably wouldn't be taking the seaweed from there either. Seaweeds don't store. They do a certain amount of filtering, but they're not like bivalves. You know, like, I mean, an adult oyster that can filter up to 200 liters of water a day. That's a huge amount. That's why they're so important. And, you know, there's a lot of work being done in the Forth to reintroduce oysters.
Yeah.
And seaweed works in conjunction with that. But seaweed, as long as you're taking the tips of seaweeds, then there's not going to be, because algae is such a fast growing thing, there's unlikely to be build up. I mean, that's your basics to start with.
Yeah.
There is some warnings as well. Seaweed does come with a little bit of a warning. There's three types of seaweed as well. So there's three classifications of seaweed. So sea lettuce is a green. So you get green seaweeds. You get red seaweeds, which would be your nori, for example, that's sushi. And then you get brown seaweeds, which is your kelps and wrecks and things like that. So there's greens, there's browns, and there's reds. So another reason why eating seaweed is good is because of the levels of iodine. So we need iodine. We need a certain amount of iodine. But you can have too much iodine. It takes a fair amount to have a lot. And they also say that if your ancestors are coastal like me, most of my ancestors are Pacific. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're in Scotland, then a lot of your ancestors were island people. But if your ancestors were maybe from Central Africa or somewhere like that, where you had less of that, then your iodine levels, your sensitivity to iodine might be a bit higher if you're a landlocked sort of people, you know. But, you know, coastal people, you tend to be able to have a lot of iodine and need it. But we can have too much. So brown seaweeds are very high in iodine. So your kelps and things like that, they're very high in iodine. So you should have those in moderation. But like I said, nori, that sushi is made with, that's a red seaweed. So it's quite low in iodine. So in theory, you could eat as much of that as you want. So that's part of the reason maybe why it's become so popular.
Never thought of that. Yeah, interesting. Yeah. About the greens? What about the sea lettuces and things?
Well, the greens, again, are fairly low in iodine, actually. So, again, you should you should be, like you pointed out, it is so nutrient dense that you're unlikely to sit there and eat and have a huge bag of the stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you can have a certain amount, but the green seaweed's relatively low in iodine. So in theory, you, as much as you can eat, that should be fine. Yeah. But the brown seaweeds, they're quite high, but it's the brown seaweeds are what they make dashi from. So when you cook brown seaweeds, when you like bring them to the boil, you're actually losing about 70% of the iodine. It evaporates.
Okay.
So that brings the iodine levels back to safer levels.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's, when I say safer levels, you know, it's not that it's unsafe, but just to more acceptable levels, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And so therefore, you know, things like wakame, that's another very popular seaweed in Japan, and that's brown seaweed, but they make salads with it. And so a lot of people in the West, a lot of fishmongers will often sell wakame salads. So it's a seaweed salad, and people will recognize it. And it's a bright green as well, but it's actually a brown seaweed, but it turns green when you cook it.
Okay.
So that's a little bit of a misunderstanding. So people say, oh, you know, I've had wakame, it's a bright green one. I said, well, it turns green when you cook it. It's actually brown. But they've cooked it, and that's removed most of the iodine, and therefore you can eat lots of it. So a bit the same with sea spaghetti and stuff like that.
Yeah, and you have seaweeds like dulse, and you see dulse sold as well in shops in dried form usually, and people put that in salads as well, don't they?
Yeah, and that's red seaweed. So again, it's relatively low in iodine, but very high. The red seaweeds are very high in iron. So that's another reason to have it. You know, so you know, seaweeds, it's a pretty magical thing. And, you know, what I really like to show people is the difference. So dulse, for example, the red dulse, on a workshop, I will have people try it fresh, straight off the rocks. We have a little bit of fresh dulse. Then once we get back to the beach and I'm doing my my cook up around the fire, I will then give them some dried dulse. And the only thing that's been done to it is dried. But the flavor difference between fresh to dried, and then on the fire, I will actually toast some as well. And again, I'm not adding anything other than heat. So you add a little bit of heat, and it's amazing that it changes the taste profile again. So you get three completely different taste profiles from the same seaweed, and all you're doing is adding, first of all, you're adding some air, warm air, to dry it. And then the second time you're adding heat, that toasts it. And it just, you know, for me, that's another little bit of magic. So just the simple process of either drying it or toasting it, it can change the profile, the taste profile. Again, it's the facials.
Yeah.
It's the facials you get.
Yeah, but it is amazing, isn't it? And listening to you talking about them and talking about iodine levels and that sort of thing, I mean, unlike mushrooms, where you can pick a mushroom and get yourself very sick if you don't know what you're doing, you do need to know what you're doing with seaweed, but you're not going to kill yourself with any seaweed, are you?
Yeah, seaweed's a lot more forgiving. There's no avenging angel of death seaweed.
Yeah. Okay.
That I've come across. So yeah, there's no poisonous seaweeds per se. And you know, as we've been saying, if you to get yourself sick from seaweed, you're going to have to either be taking it from somewhere that's very obviously don't be taking it from there, you know, or having large amounts, which is in itself a feat. Yeah, so there's no poisonous seaweeds per se. Yeah. There are seaweeds that you definitely won't have a lot of, but you know, again, the thing is that you know, as I say to people, is just because stuff is edible doesn't mean it's palatable, and just because you can eat it, just because it's not poisonous or just because it won't kill you doesn't mean you should necessarily eat lots of it. You know what I mean? Yeah. So you do have there's a seaweed called Desmarati. And there's quite a few different species of that around the world. And we do have a species of that that grows around the waters of Britain. But it's produces sulfuric acid.
Oh, wow.
When it washes up.
Wow.
So hence the nickname stringy acid weed.
Nice.
But, you know, again, when it washes up, it starts to produce sulfuric acid. So we said earlier, don't eat washed up seaweed in the first place. Yeah. So if you find a puddle of that and the sulfur smell doesn't put you off, and in your head, my voice saying, don't eat washed up seaweed, those two things doesn't put you off, and you still try some, you're unlikely to eat a lot of it. And, you know, it's not arsenic, or it's not some pure poisonous. You're having a sulfuric acid, so you're not going to have a lot.
Phew, that's good to know. I can't say I've come across any of that on my own foraging or swimming trips, but I really don't gather any seaweed that's floating or washed up on the tide. Well, we'll talk more about how to forage for seaweed safely and hear an announcement from Jason right after we've heard these messages, so stay tuned.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimising your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on the world's number one talk health radio station. Yes, you're listening to UK Health Radio with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and my guest today, Jason Biles, seaweed forager, chef, and workshop leader. We were talking about the safety of seaweed foraging before the break, and I guess the main dangers are not understanding the tides and wearing inappropriate gear. And if you're asking yourself, where can I find out more about this? Jason has a booklet that will help you.
Yes, that's right. So I've got a little booklet called Thriving and Then to Tidal. But you're right. That, I mean, you know, and people forget that the intertidal can be a dangerous place.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily designed for humans. You know, most people, when we go to the beach, we spend a lot of time on the sandy shore and we go to sandy beaches. But if you're looking for seaweed, you're better off to go to rocky. The more diversity on a coast, the more diversity of seaweed you're going to find. So a nice, long, sandy stretch of beach, you're not going to find a lot of seaweed. You might get some certain species washed up. But, you know, it's these rocky coastlines, these rocky shores. And so, yeah, not understanding the tides, and that's something that we've lost. And so we go back again to that connection. You know, these are things that we've, you know, once upon a time, if you live next to the sea, you were highly connected to the tides and the patterns, you know, and that's all linked to the moon, and it's linked to the sun, and it's linked to what planets are in the earth, in the sky at any one time. All the stuff's affecting that. So again, it's all that, it's that connection and our little place in this universe. But so not knowing the tides, that can be dangerous, turning up at the wrong time. And I've, you know, a standout moment in my workshops is I had a mountain guide, no names mentioned, but he, if he's listening, he'll know I'm talking about him. But he'd been a professional mountain guide for 20 years, And on my workshops, I provide helmets for everyone because we're going out into a very slippery, rocky environment.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that's not for that. It's just, it's partly for my PLI as well,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
but it's, you know, I want to keep people safe. So I provide helmets, and he said, oh, I was a mountain guide for 20 years. We're just going down the beach. I don't need a helmet. I said, well, you know, wear the helmet or stay in your car. That's fine by me.
Good for you. Yeah. Okay.
So, you know, he put the helmet on and he had a great time. And, you know, he really got into the sea. We had a good time, and you know, we stayed in contact actually. And you know, every year he'll send me he sends me the wee update of what him and the family's up to, and he'll send me pictures of all the mountains and seabirds picked and stuff. But a few months after he'd been on this workshop, he sent me the first email. He said, "I know what you're talking about now, Jason," because he'd gone to a beach near to where he lives, and he'd walked well out into tidal. This was on a big spring tide. Mm-hmm. He'd walked out very far. And he got to around about a kilometre out. So he's walked a long way.
Wow.
It was a big spring tide. He's walked a long way out. And he turned around and he suddenly realised, oh, I might as well be on the moon here, you know, because it was just the environment. It was so rocky.
Yeah.
It's slippery. You've got all of that stuff. He turned around and he just thought, oh, this is a totally alien world for me. So he had his helmet. Good man. Mm-hmm. But, you know, suddenly he realized what I was talking about, because, you know, you get that far out into tidal, it's not designed for humans to go wandering around. So,
yeah.
You know, so you've got to really go with presence of mind. You've got to really go with intention, but you've really got to sort of become part of, you know, of the environment. And you know, and I do a safety briefing and I basically say, seaweed is slippery, but it grows on hard rocks.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah.
And then on top of that, like you said about the tide, then if you don't time the tides, then you've also got the whole of the ocean coming back and reclaiming all of that land. Because it's only land for a short time. The rest, you know, half the day, the other half of the day is underwater. So those combinations can make it. You've got to think about it before you go plan it.
You have, and I think a lot of people, if you live in a city, it's very easy to completely lose track or lose connection with that. And I mean, I see people coming to the coast, absolutely no clue about how the tides work.
Yeah.
They see the tide out at a certain point and they kind of seem to have the idea that it's going to stay there. And they'll maybe leave something on some rocks and go further out. And then before you know where you are, before the tide has actually covered everything, it's filled up some of those pools. And I've seen people with soaking wet backpacks and all sorts of things that they've just left and not thought that this is a dynamic area. This is a dynamic environment where, you know, you've got to deal with water and rocks and, you know, and a whole load of other things going on at the same time. And if you don't pay attention, you can be in real trouble. And I know there's another place a bit further along the coast from here where the tide comes in really quickly and you can get cut off if you're in the wrong place.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. It's a super dynamic environment.
Mm-hmm.
It's ever changing and it can turn just like that.
Yeah.
You know, you're 100% right. And, you know, for me, that's half of the enjoyment.
Because
it is changing.
Yes.
And I can go to the same spot. You know, I've been going to the same spots for 6 years. And every time I go there, it's slightly different. And, you know, so that keeps me interested, keeps me on my toes. But it is it's super fast changing. The other thing is when the tide's coming in, that can actually change the air pressure and everything in an area. So, you know, these are all things that we've lost connection with.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So and when the tide turns, it can turn really quickly. You know, you're right. And, you know, a wet bag is least of your problems. If you're stuck out on a wee outcrop of rocks and the tides come in, you know, and on top of that, it's the North Sea. So, you know, you only need 10 minutes in there and, you know, you swim in there. So, you know, if you're not equipped, then, you know, it could turn nasty fairly quick if you're not.
Oh, it does. It can. And you've got, you know, tides and also, you know, the rip tides as well to contend with. Possibly if you're not aware enough, but you know, I swim in it. Yes. But I know where I'm swimming, what I'm doing. And I know what my tolerance is for the cold water. So in other words, I don't stay in forever. I'm not stuck on a rock with the tide rising around me. I get in, swim for 10 minutes, get out. If it's as cold as it is today when we're recording this, right, which is about zero degrees still probably, or even maybe just 5 minutes, and you get out. You know what your limits are, but you have to learn that. And I guess it's kind of difficult, and understandably, for people who don't live by the sea and don't understand how the sea works, how tides work, it's very difficult to really get an understanding of that just for a day. So maybe best to go with somebody
who knows. That's right. So my wee booklet, Thriving in the Tidal, goes into all of that stuff. But, you know, the other thing to think about is it's not just how the sea can impact you, it's how we can impact the sea, and we can impact that environment as well.
Yeah.
So I do jokingly say to people, it's a 52-page lecture of, you know, keeping yourself safe, but also being respectful when you're out there. So,
I mean, for instance, we don't approach seals. I mean, there are lots of seals around, but we do not approach them. You know, we don't go up to them and try to stroke them.
No, because they're a wild creature. Yeah, and they've got very sharp teeth.
They've got very sharp teeth, yeah.
Especially around dulse season, the red dulse, that's in season around September. That's pup season for the seals. Mm-hmm. So they get extra touchy around about that time. So, yeah, best avoided.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's lots of little things like that we've forgotten. But, you know, I did see somebody try and pet a seal once.
Okay.
A wild seal. Next thing he was off to A&E.
Yeah.
So,
Yes, I've heard similar stories, and much as I love seeing them from a distance, and I love hearing them talking to each other and calling, you know, singing, as we say, although it's not so much singing as howling. But anyway, it is a lovely sound, I think, and I really appreciate them, but I'm not going to go up to one and pet one. Never.
But, you know, it's all about respect, isn't it? But it's all about understanding. You know, and again, that's half of why I do what I do, because it's about, sharing that respect. But it's also, if we can understand something and then therefore we can care for it more, then we can do stuff to, you know, if you understand something, then you're closer to maybe falling in love with it, and then you're going to care for it a lot more, you know. And I think that's what we need more of in the world now. We need more people that understand this. You know, you don't have to have the full scientific understanding of everything, but it's more about having the understanding that, you know, this stuff is just, you know, it's special, and, you know, and that we are all connected, and therefore we do need to care for it.
Yeah.
And we need to, you know that everything, we can affect stuff, you know. Losing your bag and then to tidal, that's, you know, that's unfortunate for you, but actually it could be quite unfortunate for a seal or all these other mammals, sea creatures that are going to end up entangled or whatever. Yeah. So, you know, there's lots of little things like that that we just need to remember and just remember that connection.
Absolutely. And the amount of plastic stuff that I sometimes, the people that I swim with, we're picking plastic stuff off the beach and, you know, rubbish off the beach all the time. All the time. And we do pick it up and put it away safely in a bin, because we know what it can do to the wildlife out there, you know. We've seen it as well, you know, birds with things around their necks and, you know, all these kinds of things, so they can't feed, so they die. It's it's really heartbreaking. But with people like you around, Jason, to teach us how to go about things, I think it's a better world. And so tell me where people can get a hold of you and what your website is. And also you might have a bit of news for us as well, I think.
Yes. So a couple of things to remember. I do seaweed. I teach about seaweed. So, and I stay in the East Nuke of 5. So my website is called East Nuke Seaweed. So it should be quite easy to remember. So you can come to the website. You can get hold of me through the website. If you've just got questions, you can send me a question. The other thing to remember, though, is that, the workshops, we do have a lot of fun as well. so you can come and find me at East Nuke Seaweed. And, the bit of news that I've got coming up. Also, just quickly, obviously I've got all the social media stuff as well. Yeah. So again, Facebook, Instagram, any of that stuff, just search East Nuke Seaweed, you'll find me.
Yeah.
But the little bit of exciting news I've got is that myself and some other handful of other seaweed enthusiasts that stay in Fife, we are organising a seaweed festival for next year, for the end of next year. So we're just at the planning stages at the moment, but we will be putting a call out to people. If anyone out there, any artists or anyone else doing stuff with seaweed, get in touch. Would love to have you along as a collaborator. So, yeah, that's something to look forward to for next year. There'll be lots of fun activities all based around seaweed. We've got artists already. We've got chefs. We've got a couple of little local restaurants. And we've got some family-friendly activities on the beach. We've got loads of stuff planned for September of next year. So keep an eye out. That will be hitting all the social media and the press and everything pretty soon.
I think that's really exciting. I'll be there. I'll come along. I'm looking forward to it.
You're
actually
invited, definitely.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to that. And so Leo, look out for news about that. And if you fancy a trip to what is a very lovely part of the world, here on the east coast of Scotland, then do get yourselves along and take part in all the fun. But Jason, just remains for me to say thank you so much for today. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you again and talking about seaweed again, because it's such a, well, not so much in other parts of the world, but certainly in Europe and around the West, it's been a bit forgotten for a long time, I think. So it's great that people like you are bringing us back to this really important food and also that connection with nature. So thank you so much, and thank you for your time today.
That's fab. No worries. Thank you very much, JJ.
Jason Biles there. And once again, the website is eastnukeseaweed.com. That's nuke spelt N-E-U-K. I'll definitely be going to that event next September. Really looking forward to that. For now, though, we've come to the end of the show, so I think I might just nip into the kitchen and finish off the dried sea spaghetti in my cupboard and cook up an interesting sauce to go with it. While I'm doing that, you can find out more about me and my work at thepracticalalchemist.uk. You can book a free exploratory call or book a session with me there. You'll find me on social media as The Practical Alchemist and on the YouTube channel Alternatively Speaking. Thank you for listening today. I look forward to you joining me another time here on UK Health Radio. Until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.